Our next guest is someone who's spent a lot of time thinking about what actually makes therapy work, and the answers might surprise you. She's here today to challenge some assumptions about the way we approach healthcare. Please welcome Kay Kerr. So, Kay, what assumptions will you be challenging with us today?
Well, something a little controversial today, Rosemary. I'm going to talk about what makes good therapy.
Okay.
Yeah, something that patients have to choose, you know, what sort of services they go. Sometimes they walk out happy, sometimes they're not. And this is kind of just a little bit of an explanation about maybe why that might be happening. So I kind of titled this the what, the how, and the patient of therapy.
Now, here's a question that sounds pretty simple, but oddly controversial. In therapy, what matters more? What the therapist does, or how they do it?
Yeah, it's a big question, isn't it? And I think it scares a few therapists when they think all that study that they did, and maybe maybe it's not just the only thing that makes successful therapy.
Okay.
So is therapy about getting the facts from someone who knows the protocol and applies it correctly? And it doesn't matter if they look at you and listen as long as they get the facts right. Is it that? Or is it more like a good conversation with someone who actually listens and makes sure you understand and why and how of the plan and is invested in it with you?
Okay.
Two different approaches, really.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Now, Kay, if you asked the public, can you get a lot of different answers? People like different approaches, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And that's certainly shown in the evidence. It's really interesting when you look at the evidence, say if we take a meta-analysis that's been done of this sort of thing or an analysis of lots of different research programs, you know, ways of looking at it. And they all have slightly different percentages of what makes an effective approach to therapy. But they all tend to come in the same order. If you look at the research, it says that how you do therapy or the relationship and the process, you know, the fuzzy, warmy stuff, like the alliance, the empathy, the warmth, the collaboration, trust, responsiveness, all those things actually tend to make up about 40 to 50% of the success of therapy. Probably viewers are not, or you know, listeners out there are not surprised at this because it is what people report. What you do, the techniques that you use, and the models of care that you use, probably only make up about 15 to 25% of the success. That's probably something that therapists don't really want to hear. And client factors outside of therapy make up about 30 to 40% of the success. And that's understandable because every individual does things differently. They have different needs. They've got different motivation, different sort of readiness for change, different social supports and different personalities and also different severities of injury. So lots of differences amongst the patients. So that one makes a lot of sense.
And that quietly haunts most treatment rooms, and it is often quietly ignored by medical authorities, regulatory boards, and teaching institutions whose focus is mostly on what the therapist does.
Yeah, that's true. It's a little bit scary, but it very much is what we see in practice. When you ask people who have been to a medical appointment that didn't go well, the conversation's more likely going to be something like, he didn't listen, he just told me his opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Or she showed me an exercise and gave me a piece of paper with an exercise on it. I haven't done it because I don't know how to do it anyway, I can't remember, and it didn't make any difference. So that's not just patients being difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It's actual data about therapists and the way they do things and the importance of not just what they do but how they do it.
Absolutely. And Kay, traditionally allied health is trained in the what, isn't it?
Yeah, the what. What, the protocol, it's all the things we learnt at university, all the things that we do courses on. And, of course, they're the things that we think we're good at. But maybe that's not enough, you know. The what's the correct protocol, the safest exercise progression, what is an evidence-based intervention that we're guided to do by our medical authorities. Which all makes sense because no one's really coming, you know, to just get a nice fuzzy feeling. They're coming to get the best advice
and the educated
advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the how?
Yeah, the how. The how is the big one. Of course, it's the one that we said made up 40 to 50%
of the success. Yeah.
But, you know, if you just imagine this, you've got two patients come into your practice on the same day.
Yep.
Both of them had hamstring injuries in a football game on the weekend. They're both given the same evidence-based treatment plan. But their success in that program isn't just because that was the right program to give them. It's also because they're different patients, different patient factors, different personalities. They've got different lifestyles. One might be really busy at home with five kids and a job and hasn't got time for exercises or can't get to the gym four times a week,
you
know.
Yeah.
So many different things about them. They've got different motivation levels, or maybe they don't. Maybe they just don't have time for it. So you can imagine how the result's going to be different for two different people. One of them might have a therapist who's happy to, you know, discuss those patient factors and figure out a way with them and be a little bit more involved in the process. And, you know, that's where we see the differences.
Okay.
Who'd have thought they'd make up 40 to 50%, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Amazing numbers. Mm. Okay, so how about the result?
Yeah, so of those patients, one of them probably improves steadily and the other drops off. He hasn't got time to do the exercises, vanishes after a couple of sessions, and it becomes no longer important. May well drop out of his sport altogether, may never go back to it, might develop chronic health issues. So the differences are big. People's ability to do a program to, you know, follow through is different, and they're motivated by different people, by different experiences, and, you know, can make the world a difference.
Yes, certainly. Okay. Listeners, we're talking to Kay Kerr and we've spoken to her lots, so we're just enjoying having this little chat today. Now, Kay, with some of the differences, is it what we did or how we did it? Does that sort of make a big deal?
Yeah. I guess you're asking, does the what really still matter?
Yeah.
You know, and of course it matters. Absolutely it matters. But techniques matter most when the problem is specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a particular intervention that matches that problem.
Mm-hmm.
When the person wants structure, some people just come in and they just say, I want you to tell me what to do and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And that's their personality, you know, and you have to listen to that and follow through with it. Also, when the intervention matches the issue. So if you're not going to do the right intervention for the right issue, then obviously it doesn't matter about anything else.
None.
You're not going to get the result. So, of course, yes, the what still matters. It matters very much. And that's why we do all the learning and the teaching that we need to, you know, have a successful intervention.
So, Kay, how would a therapist deal with that information to get the best result for the patient?
Yeah. So what makes up that 40 or 50%, hey? You know, what changes the outcome? It's really important. I guess the best word is listen. You know, if we listen to patients. So patients need to drive their own therapies. The World Health Organization recommends patient-centered therapy as being the cornerstone of all medicine these days. And and certainly that's what we see works the best.
Okay.
Of course, they've got to show a genuine interest in not just the problem, but the patient factors that contribute to it. So, you know, if I've got someone sitting there really stressed, I need to really be attuned to that and, you know, understand that whatever program I give them, they may not be able to follow through. It's part of my job to figure out how, though, figure out exercises. Maybe I'm going to give them, you know, put their washing on a different step and carry it up every day, and that's how they get their steps in, you know, up and down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Different step for every family. I do that in my own family,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So we've got to fit things in, you know. Everyone's got a different set of issues. Clear, meaningful and holistic assessments. There's so many times my patients will come in and say, oh, I went to someone to see about my my wrist, and they gave me wrist exercises, but my whole arm is aching now. Mm. And really, you know, that's not holistic, because we really should have looked at all the other possibilities that might be contributing to that, the elbow, shoulder, neck, maybe even headaches, maybe even had a stroke. You know, it can be serious things that we're missing out on by not being holistic.
And just on that, Kay, would most physiotherapists, you're sort of like a therapy centre, so you've gone above physiotherapy, haven't you? You've gone more into it. Because I know personally I've been to a physiotherapist on several occasions, and they treat what I tell them to treat. Hey? And that's pretty bad, I know, but yeah.
It's not the way I like to see things done.
No.
Look, there are a lot of norms out there,
of course.
Everyone's expectations are different, and I guess that's where expectations come into
it. Okay.
Meeting patients' expectations is really important. At our centre, yes, we do have exercise physiologists, dietitians, therapy assistants, all that, but I'm only talking about my job as a physio, and I certainly believe that better treatment comes from listening to people and treating the whole person.
Okay.
And assessing the whole person
and
figuring out, you know, a plan that is patient-centred, that, you know, has clear explanations, that's done with collaboration of the whole team then. So my plan might involve me solving a few issues and then transferring them on to another person who can deliver the next stage of care, say an exercise physiologist.
Okay. And that can all happen in your therapy centre?
Oh, absolutely.
Isn't
that
lovely?
You know, that's the way I always planned on having a therapy centre, so that we could see people through to that almost completion. Not that you're ever complete, because of course we're all ageing with our problems. So therapy's never finished.
No. Okay.
Oh, we look after people well into the future as well, which is what they want. Mm-hmm. You know, some don't, but you know,
the majority do.
Yeah,
and so that's where the genuine care comes in, Kay, isn't it? Really?
Well, I think so. You know, you can't replace a good relationship with technique, but you can't replace good techniques with a good relationship either. Everything's important in the mix.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what, coming back to that evidence, that's what the evidence shows. You
Wonderful.
Know, it's hard for patients out there, because they need to figure out what makes a good service as well, you know, and people don't necessarily know that. You know, often it's the doctor giving them a referral to go somewhere, and their expectations sometimes are met and sometimes are not. But I guess that's worth talking about as well. You know, what should they look for in a service that meets all of those needs? The empathy side of it, you know, the how, the what, and the consideration of all their patient factors.
So, Kay, you've written down a few things here, like green flags, a good sign. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, well, you know, thinking about what they should be looking for, you know, the green flags would be that the person that they see listens first.
Yep.
They're not feeling rushed.
Mm-hmm.
They're allowed to finish their story. They feel heard and understood. Yeah.
Then everything's explained clearly.
Everything's explained clearly. They explain why you're doing things. The language is clear and not confusing. You leave with a sense of what's going on. Your goals matter. They ask what you want to get them back to. You know, are they going back to sport, or is it just they want to be able to get out of bed in the morning and walk to the toilet? That might be, you know, some of your elderly all they need to do.
Yeah.
Your goals shape the plan.
Yeah.
Decisions feel shared in that case. The plan fits your real life, you know. Some of the exercises and strategies and things are realistic. It's a bit like I'm saying about going up the stairs as compared to going to the gym four times a week, you know. They adapt to your work, family, life, your energy levels. And options are discussed. You know, they've come to you to find a solution. It's a shared decision there. And they check in and adjust. You know, your therapist is not just going to leave you in the lurch and say, yeah, go and do this. And, we, you know, want to have the feedback and want to try and adapt things to make it work, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there's some yellow flags there. Pause and reassess?
Of course, there are. Sometimes you just get that little feeling of you walk out and feel a bit uncomfortable, you know, and they're probably what we call the yellow flags.
Okay.
You think, oh, why do I feel uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm.
You might have felt a bit rushed or brushed aside.
Okay.
Like, you know, your importance wasn't quite there. You're a bit confused or feel awkward about asking questions. It's really a patient's right to know everything about themselves, you know.
Okay.
I mean, some patients come in and say, oh, you probably won't like this, but I've been Googling. And I always say, no, I think, you know, it's your body. You should know everything that you can, but don't believe it all that you read on Google because, you know, a bit of AI gets it all wrong, doesn't it?
Sometimes, yeah.
Quite often, yeah. But it's good for them to have that that baseline where they know what questions to ask and where they're to answer those questions as best we can. The plan shouldn't feel generic, like you're just given an exercise sheet, because, you know, my sprained ankle isn't the same as everyone else's sprained ankle, and my body isn't the same body to have that ankle on either, so it should be a little bit different, you know. Or you feel like you're being subtly blamed. I mean, a lot of people do feel like that, you know. If someone's coming in for a weight problem, for example, you know, it might be fine to sort of discuss that at length, but, you know, don't feel like you have the ability, the, I don't know, permission to go discussing everything that's not related as well. So, you know, the real sensitivity is involved.
Absolutely,
It doesn't always mean poor care, I've got to say.
No.
It just means that they're worth noticing and maybe bringing up and having that a little bit refined for yourself.
And let's have a go at the red flags. consider looking elsewhere. I mean, wow.
Well, I think we've all done that before too.
Absolutely.
You know, there have been times when I have taken a child to a doctor and thought I'm never going back again. And I'm sure everyone's had that experience. And there'd be things like when your pain or your symptoms have been just dismissed. Now, a lot of people with chronic pain can relate to this, you know. They've been to so many people and it's like, oh, well, get your act together or something that, you know, without actually delving in and trying to understand why that pain is there and what, you know, what's really going on or what other help we can get for them. You're just told to push through and not given an explanation. Your goals aren't discussed or you don't feel safe raising your concerns, and that's really important, you know.
Your
discomfort is important information.
So you can sort of sometimes feel that you're just almost nagging about it to the doctor. I mean, you know, you say the same thing each time you go and pretty well get the same response.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not...
You sound like you're talking from experience there. I think all of us can talk from experience because, you know, and even the medical people, the doctors, the physios have a bad day where, you know, like, well, sometimes we've all got to toughen up a little bit. But, but yes, I think it's very much the case that sometimes people are dismissed. One of the big areas that you find that in, like I say, is chronic pain.
Chronic pain, absolutely.
You know, your pain is explained in a way that, it, you know, can create fear. Well, it shouldn't be, you know. Pain should always be explained in a way that reduces fear, not increases it. So, and often that's just information, drawing diagrams, you know, explaining the causes, the way pain works. Focus be on progress and function, not chasing a quick fix, you know. If someone's had pain for years and you hand out something to say, if you do this, your pain will be gone, that's really quite unethical, isn't it? You know, it's about the progress and the function and the support. Treatment should be paced gradually, not pushed too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And care should feel collaborative, like we're really working with the patient and we're not thinking that we can solve their very complex problems by ourselves. We are going to involve a whole team, you know, make them feel very supported, not mechanical about it.
Good one. Now, the green flag is a beauty.
Yes, well, I guess some of the things that we could say to make a patient feel a bit more supported might be things like, your pain is real, even if the scans don't show damage. That one really resonates with me because so often my very worst pain patients have got nothing much at all showing on a scan.
Yeah.
And then you can see someone with x-rays that look like they've been run over by a truck, you know. And they say, oh, no, I've never had pain.
Wow.
You know, x-rays and pain are not a good correlation to go by. Or things like, we'll build this up at your pace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good one to say to a patient, you know, because at the patient's pace. It's not our, you know, we can advise, but we can't form a plan for a patient independently. They need to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in control of how we progress. There are other things, you know, that it's got to be them in control, not us in control of it. But, you know, it's a joint thing.
Yeah.
Yep. We've got to be particularly cautious, though, when pain is repeatedly minimised or treatment feels rushed and impersonal.
Yeah. And Kay, the bottom line, you know, good physiotherapy and allied health care isn't just about the right technique. It's about?
Well, I'll give you four things.
Good.
It's about listening. Two, it's about clear explanations. Three, it's about collaboration. And, of course, four is respect. And I think respect covers everything else because, you know, it goes both ways. Patient respects the therapist. Therapist respects the patient. And then we have a collaborative team that is going to make changes and the patient will feel well supported in getting there.
Fabulous. Now, Kay, I think if you feel heard, believed and involved, well, you've more than likely going to benefit absolutely from any of these treatments, aren't you?
I think the most effective therapists integrate everything. You know, they choose interventions that are based on what fits the person in that moment and with a strong alliance.
Thanks so much for joining us again, Kay. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rosemary. I hope this discussion has given your listeners permission to expect good care.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you, Kay.
Thank you, Rosemary.
I think that's pretty wonderful. What an interesting conversation. Thanks so much, Kay. And we've really challenged us today to think differently about what makes therapy truly effective. And it's not just about the techniques or the protocols, but about the relationship, the listening, and truly seeing the person in front of you. It's a great reminder that how can be just as powerful as the what. We really appreciate you sharing your insights with us this morning on 101.5 FM.